Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's jump right in to today's guest confession.
Hey, Jay.
Hello, Natalie.
How are you doing this morning?
You know, I'm great because we've already been bantering with our guest. I'm so excited. You know why?
Why?
She wants a goat as well.
Well, she likes goat yoga. She likes goats.
Yes.
Goats seem to be a big theme in her life right now.
She's my BFF. You do not get any friends now.
I don't really care. Shannon's already my friend. She'd already committed to me, and we're going to do a podcast. Because Shannon is a pro at podcasting because she has her own podcast.
I know. And you know, it's so much fun. Shannon, we are so glad to have you here because it's interesting to have another podcast with us, our podcaster with us. Let me tell you a little bit about Shannon.
Please.
Because she's a podcaster like us for reasons like us. So let me tell you about Shannon. So we have with us today Shannon Traphagen. Look at me. I got it right. She's also known as S.M. Traphagen. That's what she uses for her books. So Shannon became a caregiver at 43 when her husband of 18 years was diagnosed with an incurable brain cancer, and he passed 14 months later. Shannon, however, has taken that experience and turned it into something, like I said, sounds very similar to us, Nat.
Yep.
The Game on Glio is a podcast in his memory, and it's morphed because I think originally it was a focus on brain cancer, and today it's a hope-filled show that Shannon says is about rising above trauma, loss, and finding hope again.
Shannon, we always like to start off, and just, I love yours and your husband's love story. I mean, I know when we met, we could have recorded our conversation, and that would have been our podcast. And then we talked about menopause, and we talked about all life after, and it was hilarious. I'm like, that's it. We're having our own podcast.
Yeah.
And so just add another. We've got so much free time. And so, but Shannon, go ahead and share with us. Give us some information about your background, like where you grew up. You've got sibs, which I love that she's going to share what birth order.
Mm-hmm.
Super important.
Oh, yeah.
So give us some deets about that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned birth order because that tells you a lot about your personality and your character. It really does. It kind of tells you, especially as a caregiver, as an oldest sibling, you tend to have that caregiving gene a bit more predominantly than if you're the younger sibling. typically, according to psychology. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I grew up in Western New York. Well, I grew up in Central New York. I moved to Buffalo, New York for my late husband. Mm-hmm. I'm one of three siblings. I'm the oldest of three, and we're kind of all spread out. So my parents, God bless them, are retired and married 52 years. Oh, wow. And they've now split their time. They're thoroughly enjoying retirement and splitting their time between all of us. We all live in different states. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're a really close-knit family. And my husband and I were the same way. We were really close to his family as well. He was the middle child, which I think is why we worked well together.
Clearly. I can align with Mike.
Yes, as the oldest, and he was the middle. He had two sisters. My brother had two sisters, and my brother was the middle child, which was interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, so there was a lot of synergy between our families. And, you know, it's interesting because I whenever I tell this story, people ask all the time, you know, what made you and Mike work, and, you know, how did you guys meet? And when Mike and I started dating, we had met through mutual friends when I was only like 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were together for about 4 or 5 years before we ever got engaged. So we moved in. It was kind of that perfect progression. We dated. I moved to Buffalo. I lived in my own place for a year and a half. Then we got our parents' blessings and moved in together. Then we got engaged. Like, everything kind of went the way it was supposed to.
Yeah.
It was that feeling where you were like, yeah, this was meant to be. We were really meant to be together.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those really fun stories to tell and to share with people. But, you know, that's kind of how everything jumped off. And I moved to Buffalo as things got more serious with us. Not that I love Buffalo now. It has grown a ton. But when I first moved here, after about 6-7 months, I was like, what did I do? Why am I
in
Buffalo?
Cold up there.
Why am I here?
My best friend Bradley lives in Buffalo, and I'm like, dude, there's a lot of snow. Like,
oh,
it's chilly.
And if you're in the city, you're usually okay. But with where I live, I'm kind of close to the Pennsylvania border. I'm down in the south towns, and we get not inches, we get feet.
Oh.
Feet and feet of snow every season. So yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal.
So you and Mike, when you all met, did you meet in college or was it after?
It was right after. Actually, we met. So I had joined. I finished my undergrad degree and had decided to join AmeriCorps.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did AmeriCorps for 2 years and got a scholarship from that I used to go back for my master's degree. And it was during the tail end of my service with AmeriCorps that he and I. We kind of already knew each other because we had similar circle of friends,
mm-hmm.
but we started connecting a bit more. And it was one of those things where every time I was single, he wasn't. When he was single, I wasn't. And then we finally went to this, we were at a party together, and I don't even know if I was 24 yet. And I told one of my girlfriends, I said, I really, really like, everyone called him Trappy.
Yeah.
That was his nickname. And I said, I really, really like Trappy. There's something about him. I was about 24 when we actually started dating, but it was after college.
Yeah.
We were together when I started my master's program. We were already living together when I started my master's program. So, yeah.
So life is moving along. You guys are working. Tell me what Mike did.
So Mike was, he was a product engineer in military and defense.
Ooh,
so
cool.
He knew from high school. He just, I always tell people, he was like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory without the autistic mannerisms.
Yeah.
Like, he was normal.
Yeah.
But, he was that cool guy engineer that he was the guy's guy. He didn't have a pocket protector. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, okay, not to all those carrying pocket protectors. It's fine.
Yes.
It's cool.
Yes. He was just very intelligent. I mean, just smart as a whip. And he could rattle off complex numbers really quickly. And so he was just very good at engineering. And he loved race cars. He loved working on cars. He was kind of a gearhead. And so he kind of, that was his passion. And engineering became what he really wanted to do. And so after he got his undergrad, he was very fortunate to get some really amazing job opportunities, and he ended up in military and defense. and stayed on that progression. And then they actually paid, his company paid for him to go back to get his MBA. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow. I like that. It always feels better when somebody else pays for you to do something. Right. I feel that way about food.
I wish. Yeah. I wish somebody had done that for me. I'm like this close to paying off my master's degree.
Oh, girl.
Like, how long's it been? 17 years?
Yeah. Yeah. My goal was 45. I hit it right 1 month under. Like we're all like, and we're still paying.
Yes, exactly.
So life's moving along for you guys. Life is good. You've got careers. You're doing things. You're because you guys did not have children, correct?
We didn't. We took our time. You know, we were so young when we got together that we kind of grew up with each other. Mm-hmm. And once I finished my master's program, my husband always thought I was going to be a lifer because I loved school. I loved education. Mm-hmm. And I even went back, I think, in 2017. I got accepted into a media writing program at Yale. And so I attended Yale for a summer. And so, you know, he always teased. He said, you know, I don't know how we're going to fit kids into this because you're constantly in school.
Yeah.
Like, I can't help it. So it took a while. But, you know, when once we bought the house and we started to settle in and we had our dogs, life felt like it was really starting to settle, and we felt like and it's never a really good time. I mean, they always say it's never a good time to have kids.
Right.
But we just knew when we felt it, we were like, okay, I think now is a really good time to start. And so I think I was probably in my early to mid 30s, we really started trying. And after about 5 or 6 years of really trying pretty steadily and measuring things and keeping track of things, and it wasn't working. And so we started going in to figure out if there was anything going on, and everything was good. We were both really healthy. Everything looked really good. They did an exploratory surgery on me and I was actually okay. So we weren't sure, you know, we knew we were fighting something, but we weren't sure what it was. And I'm a person of faith. And so I just said, you know, maybe we're not meant to have our own. Yeah. And if not, then we'll adopt. You know, there's always another avenue. There's always, another path. And so we started that process when I was 40. We started the adoption process. And I actually, during that time period, I got pregnant 3 or 4 times. And we had done a couple of procedures. We did IUI, which never really worked. I didn't want to do IVF. I didn't want to push my body if it wasn't meant to be. But I did infertility acupuncture, and I got pregnant every time I did infertility acupuncture.
Huh.
Wow.
Which was really interesting.
Yeah.
I ended up miscarrying each time through the pregnancy, but we were already in the process. And so when we started the adoption process, it took about 2.5 years. And then we finally got picked. And we couldn't figure out. We're like, we've got such a great home. It's like that white picket fence. And we got the dogs. And why is nobody picking us?
Yeah, your home study is solid. I'm not going to lie to you. Your home study is solid.
We're good people.
We were good. I'm like, what's wrong with us? I'm like, everybody else is getting picked. And so we did. We finally got chosen. And the birth mother, she was just amazing. And she just had some really hard knocks in life and really needed help. And so we were on that path. We were probably 5 or 6 weeks away from we had just done the gender reveal. So we'd had the ultrasound with her. We knew what we were having. The baby's room was just about done. We were planning the baby shower. So that's how close we were to bringing her home when he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And we lost the adoption. So the journey of motherhood has been fraught, to say the least.
I'm gonna pause us right here. Yeah. We're gonna take a break, and we're gonna pick up.
Yeah.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Shannon. Wow, this is kind of a turning point. So you're at that cusp of, you were going to have an adoption. Tell me about the diagnosis. What happened?
What were the signs? Yeah. What were the signs that was the reason that made you say, okay, something's not right?
It was really subtle. And I don't know if it's me being a proactive caregiver, somebody who's always kind of in tune with health and body and mind, but brain cancer has, your symptoms really can vary. You can have something as extreme as a seizure, which is really what sets people off, dizziness, issues with your eyesight. And in Mike's case, none of that was prevalent. It was severe anxiety and some brain fog. And that's all he was displaying. And we thought there was so much going on. He had some amazing opportunities going on at work. We had the adoption we were getting ready to bring home. So we knew that there was some big life things taking place. And I thought, okay, this is why he's feeling anxious and it's okay. What I didn't know was that he was struggling with writing at work, but I wasn't seeing that at the time. So that wasn't presenting to me. Mm-hmm. What happened was his anxiety was just to the point where he really felt like he just couldn't shake it. Mm. And so I sat down with him on a Sunday night and I said, make a list. Write down all your symptoms. Tomorrow morning, we're going to go to your primary. And he luckily had a primary right on site. His company offered healthcare services, mm-hmm. which was amazing, and they had a full-time physician, which was great. And so we knew we could just walk in and say, hey, you know, we just need to see the doctor real quick. So he was going through and he was kind of writing down how he'd been feeling for the last couple weeks. And then the next thing he knew, like, he was starting to write the letter C and he couldn't write it. Mm. And he was struggling to write the letter. And he kind of looked at me and I immediately went to, is he having some kind of stroke? Like, is this what's going on? So that was where my head had gone. I was not thinking brain cancer at all. Like, that was nowhere near my radar. And that's what brought us in. I said, you know what? Let's just go over to urgent care. Let's just do some basic protocols and just see where you fall. And that started everything. And he passed everything. And then we went to the emergency room because they said the only other thing you can do is an MRI. Mm. We said, okay. So we went to the emergency room. We did a CAT scan. He did ultrasounds. He did all of this stuff. They did blood work. Everything came back normal. and the MRI was the last thing we were waiting on. And even though the CAT scan came back normal, the MRI finally came back and it showed that there was a huge mass in his brain. Yeah, and that was one. And it was interesting because when we got to the emergency room and they were asking the intake questions, it was almost like the tumor knew I'm getting ready to be found out, because then all of a sudden he started struggling with things just out of nowhere. He was struggling to remember some things. He was struggling to say some things. And that's when I was like, okay. And I still thought we're on the path. Like, did he have some type of mini stroke?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that was when we got, it was probably around 12:30 in the morning, Sunday night, wow, going into Monday, that we got the official, there's a mass in his brain.
So, Shannon, I know that after this ER visit, they tell you about this mass. At what point do you get to an actual specialist and they say, this is the action plan, or this is what the cancer is? At what point do you get to that?
So, fortunately for us and for me, I was working at the time as an associate publisher for a health and wellness magazine. And being in the industry that I'd been in for so many years, and previously being a trauma social worker, I knew how to advocate. And I had sat on enough boards that I happened to know the chair of the neurosurgery department at the hospital. And so I texted him immediately and said, look, we're in the ER. This is what happened. This is what they found. What do you think? And he goes, let me look at the scans. And he was out of the country. So he took a look at the imaging and he's like, I'm thinking it's brain cancer. And I go, you need to do the surgery. I need you back here right now.
Yeah.
Because it's either you or we go down to Johns Hopkins. Like, yeah. That's, so he flew back and within 3 days did the surgery.
Wow.
And because of where it was located and how big it was, they threw out the word glioblastoma really quickly. A lot of times they won't do that depending on the location or the size of it. They want to make sure. Typically you do a biopsy first. You go in, you clear the margins, you get as much as you possibly can, and you see if it's definitely glioblastoma, because there's a lot of other brain cancers. It could be an astrocytoma. It could be a different type of glioma, which is still devastating, but they're a little bit easier to treat.
Mm-hmm.
And the length of life is usually more. So when they threw out glioblastoma, and Mike was starting to experience some really severe headaches in those 3 days between the surgery, all of a sudden it was like a drill, he said, in his temple.
Wow.
And that was when I said, okay, you know, I really think this is what we're dealing with. And so within 3 days, they did the surgery. And we knew he got as much of it as he possibly could. He said he cleared about 98 to 99% of it. But when you're dealing with glioblastoma, there's always little cells that kind of want to migrate away. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so hard to treat. And we got the official diagnosis probably within the week.
Mm-hmm. And so that really... that turns your entire life upside down. You had this, you know, I think it's one of those things, and I'll say this, when Jason got cancer, was diagnosed, Jason has neck and back issues. Mm-hmm. And I can remember thinking, like, he felt like he wasn't able to work because of it. We thought, this is going to be the hardest part of our life. And how do we do accommodations? And I know that you're thinking, you guys have been, you had infertility issues and wanting to have a baby. And now we've got this and we've got a solution. And it feels the same way for me, in the sense of, okay, we've gotten on this path and we feel like we're going. And then all of a sudden we have this cancer diagnosis and we're like, wait a second, I've had my share of really crappy crap. And yep. So that's how, yep, I felt about it. And I know and he feels that way. I mean, he really feels that way. Like, I had the hard time. And so I know that you said the adoption, it just faded to the background, I'm assuming. It went away.
We actually lost the adoption. The birth mother did not want to let us go. She didn't care. She did not care about the diagnosis. The adoption agency backed out, and we weren't expecting that. And the birth mom was in a different state, I didn't know. He was on steroids. He was getting ready to start radiation. I didn't know how to be in two places at once.
No,
and I said, if the adoption agency is pulled out, we have nobody to help us navigate the last end of this. And when you when you finalize an adoption, you have to be down in that state
That's
for
right.
3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, once they pulled out, we talked about doing a private attorney. That wasn't possible. And I remember very vividly Mike and I sitting up on the bedroom, on the bed in the baby's room, and calling the birth mom and putting her on speakerphone. And when she told us she didn't care, she wanted us anyway, Mike just started crying. And that broke me. And we knew that, you know, at this moment, it just isn't the plan. And I said, I need to focus on him. Yeah. I need to focus on his health and getting him at least to that 5-year mark. If we can get him to the 5-year mark, then we've got a shot at him staying steady for a while. And so that became that just it was just hyper focus.
Yeah.
And we were grieving. She sent us a picture when the baby was born. And that it killed me because the baby had really dark hair. She looked beautiful. And, you know, I think we always hoped that once he's stable, we can go back to her and say, okay, you know, let's see about bringing her home. And it just never materialized.
There's a lot of grief in this story.
Yeah. So tell me about 14 months. Tell me about Tom. Tell me about what your Tom looks like with Mike.
Oh, gosh. You know, when you talk to a lot of other cancer families and caregivers, and you hear stories of people who are dealing with remission and their loved one has been in treatment for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and I think about that, and I think about the time frame that Mike and I had, and I feel like 14 months came quick. And in the same respect, that 14 months was the longest 14 months of my entire life.
Agree.
It was so overwhelming and so slow, and it felt like an out-of-body experience. It really did. I didn't know if I was coming or going. I wasn't sleeping very well. His health became the top priority. So, of course, all of my annual care got pushed to the wayside. I missed my annual appointment. I didn't go to a mammogram. I didn't go to my dental cleaning. I hadn't gotten my eyes looked at. I pushed all this stuff away because there was so much going on with him. And then we hit a point where he was stable for about 6 months, and his oncologist was really holding him up as the poster child. He's like, wow, there's nothing. His MRIs are clear. He's good. He could be that case. He could be that rare case. And so we were starting to get really excited that, okay, you know, he's 45 years old. I think, you know, maybe we've got this. You know, we know it's going to take him at some point, but man, if we could get him over 50, that would be like, that's how small instead of the big dreams that you're thinking, okay, you know, if we can just get to 50 years old, you know, we're doing okay right now. And he really started, as we hit the 1-year mark of his diagnosis, he started losing weight and body mass rapidly, and he was having more and more seizures. One of his seizures produced pneumonia, which sent him into the ER. And I was really fighting and advocating with his oncologist to hear me, because I said, something is wrong. Something has changed and shifted. And he said, no. His MRI was just 2 weeks ago. It was completely clear. He's just having chemo anxiety. It's in his head. And I'm like, look, the seizures, the weight loss, this, he's throwing up every time he eats. This is not in his head. He wouldn't listen. And so I took him to the emergency room, and I demanded a spinal tap. And in doing so, we found out that, and it's very rare, brain cancer is rare as it is, and he ended up with leptomeningeal spread, which is when the cancer leaves the housing of the brain and gets into the spinal fluid.
Wow.
And there's no turning back at that point. There's nothing you can do. And so within 2 months, he disintegrated rapidly, and on October 29th of 2020, in the middle of the pandemic, he died from his cancer.
Wow.
That is, you sit there and you're like, you feel this hope, and then it gets pulled back from you. You know, I'm going to take the break now.
Yeah.
And, because I know we're a little early, but that's okay. Because I know we're going to do, I want to hit on some other things too. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back with Shannon. And Mike, her husband, has passed after 14 months from brain cancer.
Did you allow for other people to help and take care of you? Because this is notorious caregiver 101. We are terrible at letting other people care for us.
We are, especially women. You know, not to downgrade men caregivers, but I feel like women are, because we multitask so much better than men.
That's true.
We just have a tendency to say, no, we're good, and we'll do it all on our own. And that was definitely me. I was trying to do the laundry. I was trying to clean the house. I was trying to come up with new recipes that would be easy on his stomach. I was trying to take him to all his appointments. I was still working during this time. My boss was fairly challenging at the time. And luckily, I worked from home. But there were things I needed to do, so I had a few times where I had a couple of friends come and take him to radiation, and then I would meet them there to go pick him up. We finally accepted a meal train and allowed people to bring meals, which was very helpful because I was cooking a lot at that point. You know, some of the other stuff, it was really, you know, like my parents and his parents came out to the house quite often. And they would just, and I think that was the biggest thing for me, was I didn't feel like I could leave him alone because I didn't trust, is he going to have a seizure? Is he going to feel unsteady? Is he going to get dizzy? Mm-hmm. You know, what if he has a severe headache or something happens? I was so hypervigilant at that point that I didn't feel like I could leave the house and go grocery shopping while he was at home. And so our folks would come out and stay and hang out and just spend time with him or make sure, and then text me, he was doing good, take your time, so that I could take my dog for a walk, so that I could go down. I remember when he started getting worse, those last 3 months were really bad, and I was so overwhelmed because I was cooking 5 or 6 times a day just to find something that he could keep down.
You also said, though, that you found a counselor. Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you, that was something that Jason and I had tried to find, and there was a 2-month wait list after his diagnosis, and we never actually were able to connect with a counselor. And I'm a social worker. It feels insulting. Like, and you know, I'll say this, and you said, one that had experience in rare cancer diagnosis and could do counseling both for me privately and for also for us as a couple. And that was something that I vehemently looked for, was a counselor and a clinician that was seasoned, who had worked with individuals that had cancer and their caregivers. And I ultimately never found them. And we never had counseling from it. And I think there's so many things, even to today, we're 3 years out. And would that be beneficial for our relationship? 100,000%. So tell me about
that. That's a shame to hear. That there's a little bit of anger in here. It's disappointing to hear that, because there should be access to counseling for anybody. You know, there should be multiple tiers of counseling or options available, especially to those going through any type of cancer journey. That was something, and I'll be honest, during the pandemic, it was extremely hard to find a counselor, because everybody was starting to go to counseling during the pandemic. There were so many mental health needs during the pandemic. And it was really pushing. I was constantly making phone calls until I got to the point where I found a counselor through the neuro-oncology office that we were at, he was being treated at. There was a functional medicine department that was separate. And so I finally said, I'm going to look into that, because maybe they have a social worker that works through their functional medicine division. And lo and behold, they did. And she was focused on rare cancers, and she was a social worker, so she wasn't a psychotherapist, she wasn't a psychologist, so she really understood the dynamics of holistic care. And she said, I don't know if I can get you in right away. And I said, look, you got to do whatever it takes, because I don't know how long he has, and we really need help. Like, I really had to voice my concern in being a priority to get in based on the needs. And that pushed her over. And so she saw us within 2 weeks of that call. And we signed all the paperwork. We gave her all our health insurance. And she was actually the one that recommended seeing us individually and then seeing us as a couple, which I thought was brilliant.
It is brilliant.
Go ahead.
What did you learn about your marriage and your strength in that time, especially those last 2 months after that diagnosis, where you knew that Mike was incurable?
Well, I think it reaffirmed something I knew for nearly 20 years, because when he passed, we were close to 20 years together by the time he passed. And man, we were a good team. We were such a good team. And that was the one thing that I think it just validated through his entire, the only time that things got really dark was when the two and a half, three months he was on steroids, which was really very difficult, because it alters your behavior. But other than that, we just tag teamed. We knew how to, he helped out wherever he could. We were so good at communicating with each other. And we knew, he even recognized, there was a couple of times where he came home one day during the 6 months he was feeling good. He would drive, he would try to go run errands, he would do some things himself, take the dogs for a walk. And he came home one day and gave me a gift card for a massage. And he said, he goes, I know how taxing this is. Like, we just knew how to read each other, even during his diagnosis. We just knew how to be there for each other. And I think the only thing that I did, it was something that I learned about myself, and this is very much a caregiver thing, and it, everybody's different, depends on how you are in your relationship. But Mike and I were so good at being there for each other throughout our entire relationship. We knew how to support each other's needs when one person needed it more than the other. We knew how to lean and how to stand. You know, we knew how to dance with each other.
Yeah.
And once he got sick and he wasn't feeling well, really throughout the entire 14 months, for some reason, I felt like it was my job to be as strong as possible. I didn't want him to see me crying all the time. I didn't want him to see how scared and freaked out I was. because I knew he was leaning on me in that moment. He needed me, and I didn't, and I already knew that he was scared out of his mind. And I didn't want him to be more scared because he saw how fragile I was internally. So I bucked up and really, like, if I had to cry, I left the room. I would go, you know, anytime we had meetings, it was like, we're going to be okay, babe. This is going to be okay. We had affirmations. We had hopeful statements. You know, we prayed all the time. And for good or for bad, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that I, you know, that I was that way. I think there were conversations that we could have had towards the end that we didn't have because neither one of us wanted to give in to the disease. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be feel like, you know, we're not inviting the end in if we give up. So we never had conversations about what he would want from me after the fact. And that is something I regret. I wish I had talked to him about that. But we really just, even at the very end, and it's not something I've talked about a ton, but we were in sync even when he lost the ability to speak. His last day, we were able to talk. Like, I talked to him, and our eye contact, even the nurse that was with us towards the end, she's like, I've never seen anything like this in my 30 years of being here, because he understood everything I was saying, and our eyes were just locked for 8.5 hours while we sat there, and I was reminding him of everything he'd accomplished in his 45 years here on Earth. You know, I think your perspective on life really changes after you lose a spouse. That caregiver instinct is still very much there, and you can tell because I've turned it into caring for other cancer patients and doing a podcast to help other people. And so you really find a way to meet the needs of helping people because it's just so innately ingrained in you.
Yeah.
But that first year after he died was very much the question that really presented itself to me and what made me realize that I needed to fight for myself was the idea of, if I don't do something for myself, I will break from this. This will break me. And I didn't want that. And I knew he didn't want that. And I mean, I slept on a couch downstairs. I couldn't even go into our bedroom for a year. I mean, it was so difficult. But I knew that if I don't find a way to find purpose in all of this, I'm going to lose myself. And that started with my health, because I didn't even know somebody, when I went in for my annual physical after he died, it was probably three or four months after he died, I finally went in, I scheduled my annual physical, and she looked at me, she goes, oh, she goes, okay. She's like, so you're about 104 pounds. And I sat there, I'm like, no, that's not right. I'm like, you've got the wrong chart. I didn't even know. I went back to look at the, we had live feed and video of his funeral. I went back and I was looking at the video and had not realized how much weight I had lost during those last few months. I had no clue. And that was a wake-up call. And that's when I realized I got to take care of myself. I need to start eating right. I need to get back into eating right. I need to start creating a routine. I scheduled my mammogram, my dental appointment. I did all of the things that I had put off. I said, I need to prioritize my emotional and physical health. And then I actually went and found a new counselor that was trained in grief and loss. And I've, to this day, God bless her, because to this day, I've been with her for about 4 years. So she's amazing. But I had to do all of those things for myself because it was the only way that I was going to survive not only his loss, but the loss of children.
Yeah.
I lost a dog about a year and a half after he died. And two of my friends passed away in the last 4 years. Wow. Mm-hmm. So there's always this need. There's this fight instinct inside of me to survive and to survive for him and to survive for everybody else who is struggling with severe loss like that.
And so I want to ask you, it's about moving on
because I would want to. We're in our lives. We're all about the same age, except for JJ.
He's a little older.
That's my standard answer, except for JJ.
Well, yeah, because what it says is your podcast has morphed a little bit.
Exactly.
And yeah, so, I mean, it started as a really kind of a brain cancer was a focus and that yeah. type of advocacy. But yeah. now what she writes is...
My favorite part's the last part.
It says, now the podcast has morphed into a hope-filled show, rising above trauma, loss,
and finding love again.
And that's
really when we get to be girls.
Yeah, but...
I love that it's in sync. I love how you said that in sync.
Tell me about that, because it's
giving yourself permission to be happy. And Mike would want that.
Mike, yes, he would. It's taken me a long time to realize he would want that. It's really challenging. I will say that even though I am open, I have been open the last year and a half or so to dating and meeting somebody, especially because I really do feel like God made me to be a partner to somebody. Yeah. I loved being a wife and I loved being a partner, and being alone the last 4.5 years has been just... The loneliness is wearing thin. Mm. Living alone in a house by yourself is daunting. And yeah. It's not something that I enjoy. Some people do. But dating, especially, I'm 48 now and going through some hormonal changes.
I know what you're talking about, girl.
That's putting it politely.
That's a nice way to put it. My shoulder hurts.
Beautiful new phase of my life, which is such a joy.
Right?
And trying to date in the midst of that has just been, oh my God, it's excruciating at times. And then trying to, you know, to also have conversations, you know, the idea of being a young widow, guys don't get it.
Yeah.
And there are some women for widowers that have had challenges with it, but guys really struggle, especially if they come from a divorced background, but they have no idea what it means to date a widow. It's very challenging. I've had people say, why do you still have his last name? It means you haven't moved on. You know, you still talk about him occasionally. Oh, that you must be still... They expect you to just... Because when you divorce...
Yeah, it's an end.
You've made the decision. They've made the decision. It's an end. You know, it's hard for people to wrap their heads around the fact that this wasn't my choice. This wasn't our choice. And I'm always going to love him. So the idea of sharing your heart and not having it completely. So, but we, you know, every time I have a story on the show, and that was the whole, I think it was more for me to put focus on that.
Blesses us. The shows bless us, I think, as much or probably
more than. It's our own private therapy.
Yeah.
Exactly. So every time I meet somebody that's a widow or widower that says, you know, I found love again, I'm remarried, they've been so accepting, it's like, oh, okay, good. Okay, here we go.
There's hope for me.
There is hope. It's possible. It really is possible. And it is. It's a weird duality. I mean, it's strange because I feel guilty and that I still want something like this. And yet I know that it's good for me, and I know it's something Mike would want, the right person to come in and help out. And he would say, take care of me.
Yeah.
You know, be there and really... really keep you safe and help you. And so it's a strange weird mix, but it is something that, you know, from a caregiver to a widower dealing with grief and loss and being at a young age, you go through these different stages. And I've had so many people say, do you ever get to this point? Does it ever change? And it does. You know, it never goes away. Even when you have a spouse that's in recovery, that's in remission, that grief and loss of what was and hoping that it never comes back, there's always going to be a piece or an element of that that's always going to be part of your story going forward.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So, but it's I'll have to keep you guys posted because it's there are definitely some crazy stories of people that I've met. And I'm like, really? You people are supposed to be in your 40s and 50s. How is it harder than when I was 23?
Oh, ain't that the truth? All I'm going to say is technology, girl. Oh, God help us. You know.
I got off of it. I tried. I think it sent me into two panic attacks. I said, I need to delete. I can't do this anymore. There's got to be a better way.
I tell my boys, my stepsons, they're 37 and 39. Just go to church, boys. I think that is about the only place you can find a good spouse anymore. Yeah. Just stay off the internet.
Just go to church.
I actually did. I reached out to the priest that I'm very close to, and I said, is there any volunteer opportunities at the church? Because running out of other options. Maybe I just need to go back and volunteer at church.
I know, right? You know, it's always, it's in his time. Yeah, in his time. And it will happen. And the thing is, I'm like, okay, well, if there's any of our listeners out there, I'm like, oh my gosh, Shannon is absolutely a stunner.
She's beautiful.
Stunner. So beyond being pretty, let's just get over this. She's wicked smart.
Oh, yeah.
And that's always intimidating for the boys.
I know.
So be warned, this lady, you are such a game changer. And you're out, you're such a carer, and that's why clearly Shannon's my best friend, and not JJ's. But it is time for sister questions, and we are sisters. Yeah. So, and we're all sisters on this call.
Yeah.
And so, Jay, what is your question for Miss Shannon?
Where is Shannon in 5 years?
Ooh, you've never asked that question.
I know.
Oh. Ooh, what does Shannon look like? Ooh, cool.
Look at her.
Oh, Shannon better still look okay in 5 years. I'm working hard on the wrinkles.
I know she wants to find love. We know that. But where are you?
Well, I would love to have another dog.
I was getting ready to say, we're going to have a dog.
I would love to have another dog. I would love... Did you ever see the movie Under the Tuscan Sun?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Diane Ling?
Yes.
Where she has this moment where the realtor that she becomes friends with, she tells him all of these things that she wants in her life. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the movie, he shows her, he's like, you wanted family. You've got your best friend. And you wanted a baby. There's a baby in the house. You wanted a wedding, another wedding. You just hosted. All they happened in a different way than she expected them to happen.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's what I want in 5 years.
Beautiful.
I want the house to be full of energy again. I want to share my life with somebody again.
My last question, which is always my favorite, is what is your favorite guilty pleasure?
Well, seeing as I'm not a smoker and I don't drink a ton, chocolate, cupcakes, pastries have been my go-to. They have been my go-to, especially if I can put my sweats on and have a really good cupcake and throw on some weird, cheesy rom-com.
Yes!
Yesterday was a very exhausting day, and I remember I finished dinner, and I'd had a really healthy dinner, and I had these really amazing chocolate chip cookies from this little bakery. And I said, I'm only going to have one. And I finished the one, and I said, ah, screw it.
Yes.
I had another one. I'm like, I don't care.
This is the best part about being in our 40s and almost 50. I'm going to tell you right now, I've turned 50 in December. And I'm like, and the answer is, screw it. I'm going to have the extra one. And it's okay. And I'm totally okay with it. No one got hurt. And you know what? I'm totally fine. Oh. So, you know, Shannon, thank you so much for being with us. This was so much fun. We absolutely love you. And when you get that new puppy, make sure that gets pushed down to us, even if you're just loving on some puppies. That counts. So just remember, you may find a puppy in our rom-coms in a different way.
Yeah.
So just remember.
Yeah.
You know how rom-coms work.
Yeah.
So I'm writing it for Hallmark right now. All right, guys. Shannon, thanks so much for being with us. And Jay, until we confess again, we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confession Show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel.
We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the Board of Directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.